This is a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM, so please stay tuned.
What's up, everyone? My name is Tua, the host of Compare Me, Committing to Your Passion. And today, my co-host is Tu Lee. Say what's up, Tu.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hope everyone is having a good day out there.
And today's special guest is a longtime business partner. And this is my first show, so I thought I go back in time and bring back some past business and still current business partner. And Tona is our special guest today. She has been my business partner for a very long time, and I felt that she is way overqualified to come on the show to open up my Tuesday show here. So how you doing, Tona?
I'm doing awesome.
Doing awesome? She's kind of nervous there. So can you tell us a little about yourself and what are you doing right now, Tona?
Well, right now I'm kind of like in a transition period. My kids have all grown up and I'm trying new things that I've maybe put in the back burner, projects that I've had on the side but didn't really take it all the way. And so, yeah, most of you who probably see me around town see me doing a lot of little different things right now.
Okay. So going back to, 2004, when I first moved to Fresno, I was actually a graphic designer. I was doing business card designs and banners and signs. And I was basically looking for clients, and I had a really hard time because I had no experience. And and I came upon Tona and her husband, Tang. They were into the insurance industry, right? And they gave me opportunity to design all their business cards and banners and signs. And what was one thing that you saw in me that gave you kind of like say, you know what, I'm going to do business with Tua. So what was one thing that you saw that now you can tell the youth that what they can do to hopefully get the trust from other business owners who start a business?
You know, I have a lot of respect for people who are entrepreneurs. You know, I come from a very humble background too. And, you know, as refugees from the Vietnam War, I watched my family lose everything and just start over here in the United States. So I know with the struggles, there's growth and there's always opportunity, but if you're so busy looking at everything else, you're going to miss those.
Okay.
And so what I noticed about you when you came into town was that, first of all, I knew you weren't local. Mm-hmm. And second of all, I knew you started a business. Mm-hmm. And as any business, you know, we like to support the locals, especially the young businesses.
Okay.
And so, you know, I'm a big advocate for young entrepreneurs because I myself was the same way.
Okay. Were you born and raised in Fresno or from immigrant from a different country or?
Yeah, so I was an immigrant from Laos. Mm-hmm. I was born in Laos. I grew up here. But really, funny story was I started my business when I was practically 4 years old.
Okay.
You know, when we moved from Laos to the Thailand refugee camps,
okay,
I saw people setting shop and selling stuff on the side of the street. And I was like, hey, they're making money. So mm-hmm. I would just go and watch what they do. And so one day I decided to go open my own shop. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, they sell vegetables and they sell all kinds of produce.
So was this shop in Laos or?
It was on the outer skirts of the refugee camp.
Refugee camp. And feel free to jump in anytime too.
Was just gonna say that is that is amazing. At 4 years old, I can't even remember what I was doing at 4 years old, but that's awesome. That is an awesome story. So, you mentioned that you saw the shops and stuff like that opening up. So, what motivates you? What prompted you to say, "Hey, I got to go out there and be a part of that"?
Well, you know, my father was a nurse in Laos, so we had a really good life, but he was a very humble man, so we lived a very mm-hmm. simple life. And we weren't spoiled or anything, but we always had our basic needs. And then moving to the refugee camp and not having anything, it was a struggle. I mean, I saw someone have a peppermint candy, and I was like, why can't I have that, you know?
Yeah. So that motivated you to kind of like say, you know what, I'm going to step up and start a business so I can have what that person have. Did you already know some kind of business, or were you like, I'm just gonna do it?
Well, my mom used to run a little cafe when we were in Laos.
Yeah.
So she would farm during the weekend, on the weekdays, but on the weekends when there was traffic in the area near the village, she had a little cafe.
Okay.
So I knew that that's how she made money. And then when I saw people setting up shops, selling different things, you know, whether it was just charcoal they picked up, you know, in the, you know, wherever people had campfires or whatever, they would box it, they would sell it. I saw that people were selling all different things. And I was like, you know, that's how she makes money, to give her kids peppermint candy. Mm-hmm. And I want peppermint candy, so I'm going to do it. So, you know, I just went around, like, all the neighbors asking them for extra produce. They would give me a little something out of the gardens, and I bundled it, and I took it to the side of the road. I took this one Laos skirt, I put it on the ground, and I put my bundles of vegetables right there, and I put this sign on there, and I charged 10 times as much as other people, but I sold it. I think it was mainly because I was 4 years old, and it was something fun for them to see.
Okay, so when you were starting this, since this show is called Committing to the Process, because we want to know the struggles and the hardship and everything, and committing to the process, it basically means that you don't give up and you take all the risk and you just stay focused on one thing and to become successful before moving on to other things. Because once you become successful, then it will attract other things. So sometimes people say that, oh, you want to be a jack of all trades, but then you're spreading yourself too thin. So if you commit to one process, it will take you to your success, but it will attract other things. So when I say commit to your process, during that time, what was your hardship and what made you commit to that one goal of selling those vegetables on the street?
You know, my commitment was that if I was able to get money and buy peppermint candy for me, mm-hmm. well, I had seven other siblings at home. So that means I would have to sell a lot, right?
Yeah.
So even though I was sitting there and there was trucks driving by and dust was in my face, you know, in the back of my mind, I always have this thing is, if something good in life comes my way, I can't just be enjoying it by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So sticking to the process is that if you stay long enough, you can bring other people along with you, and mm-hmm. you're on that journey together. But you can say that it's struggles, but also I think that another thing is just ambition is that when you see somebody can do it, you somehow believe within yourself that you could do the same thing.
Okay. So after you came to the United States, you were still single, right? Not married yet, right?
Oh, yeah. I was just a kid.
Okay. Did you go to high school in Fresno? Where did you go?
I did. I went to high school here in Fresno, uh-huh. Roosevelt High School.
Okay. And what was your experience like going through high school, since you're like, you didn't speak English? So that's another commitment to the process as well, trying to learn the English language and the hardship. Were you still continuing your entrepreneurship mindset, or did you decide, you know, I'm going to focus on education, and where? How did the process go there?
I think when I think back, even when I was going to school, I was always doing something on the side.
Mm-hmm.
My parents just raised us not to waste time, because time is so precious, uh-huh. and you can do something with it, you know, instead of wasting it. So being productive was something that, you know, was really grilled into us as children.
Mm-hmm.
And with the time that you have, make it meaningful, mm-hmm. and don't just, like, you know, don't waste it. I mean, if you're resting, you're resting. That's good use of your time.
Yeah,
but, you know, laziness was just not permitted in our home. And so I think my parents, they taught us really good ethics.
Okay. Wow, that's a pretty... So basically, on your application when you sent to me here, you mentioned that you were like the top producers for Atlas Realty. But then let's go back a little further back. And when you and your husband Tang were in the insurance industry, I knew you guys at that time, and you were telling me stories that like you would travel all around the United States and spend time in the hotel and trying to get application process and all the everything going. Can you tell me about that process? And that way people and the young folks, they can understand that, you know, it's not an overnight thing. It's more like a process.
Mm-hmm. So my husband and I, we started in the insurance business in 1997. We started doing our studies. I had become a mom at that time and was really struggling, juggling, you know, a full-time job and my kids. And, you know, of course, we being a traditional Hmong family, my husband's parents lived with us, too.
Okay. Yeah, it's so, traditional one, huh? Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, and they're very traditional, and, you know, I respect that. So, you know, I really found it hard to... I don't think that was difficult, but it was definitely challenging. To be able to balance all that. And then, because by that time, I had my second child.
Oh, okay.
So it was a lot harder than just having one. And I'm the kind of person where I can't just leave my kids with somebody.
Were your parents and other Hmong older parents, were they pressuring you, saying that you should just be a stay-at-home mom and don't even think about pursuing this career? Was that one of your challenges?
Yes, it was. Uh-huh. Because I had children and I was working. They just felt my role was to be at home.
Uh-huh.
And what I really saw for myself was that I wanted to be able to manage my time, because as soon as my kids started school, I knew there would be field trips. There would be other things. Like, I see things way ahead of time.
Yeah.
So where I'm at is where they see me, but where I'm at is where I see it in my mind. So that was a struggle. Mm-hmm. A lot of times people don't have the vision that you have. For me, being married to a husband who has a very traditional family, I had a lot of challenges with that. I mean, there were times where I was, you know, on business trips. Mm-hmm. And it's just really challenging, because, you know, here you are with your best clothes packed in a bag, and you're looking nice, you're dressing nice, you know, you're smelling nice. And, you know, it's just out of that traditional, you know, Mungya role.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So, to add on to that, can you elaborate a little bit about the difficulties of having the traditional in-laws and husband and stuff like that? Because I'm pretty sure some of the younger entrepreneurial mindsetted women out there are kind of probably facing the same things, and they don't know how to get out of that. Mm-hmm. So maybe by sharing a little more details about it, if you're okay with it, it might spark that, just be that catalyst to where they can say, hey, you know what? If Tona did it and she faced the same circumstances that I find myself in, then I can do it too. That way they don't make excuses, because we're also good at making excuses. Oh, I have kids. Oh, I have this and that.
I see that on Facebook, where there were like these younger women, they want to start a business, but they're afraid that, you know, they look down upon because of that obstacle, what you just said. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, for me, I think when you're responsible, there's a lot in that. So for me, being responsible and being disciplined was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I always made sure that I got everything done. I got it done in advance. And I always talked to my in-laws and my husband. I let them know, hey, a month from now on this date, I'm not going to be in town. I'm going to be on a business trip. I won't be back until Monday. You know, this is where I'm going to be staying at. This is how you can contact me. So, you know, just having really good communication and being responsible with your business and your time and your commitments, not just to your business, but to your family,
helps a lot. So basically keep everyone in the loop, so that way they don't feel like you're just leaving them out.
And you exactly.
That's a pretty good one, right, too?
Yeah.
Like keep everyone in the loop, so that way they don't feel like you're just doing things without them. And so
I feel like a lot of traditional Mungyana, the thing that they're challenged with is that they have this fight in their mind, and they're struggling, like, I have this thing I want to do, but if I tell them, they're not going to let me.
I see.
So, like, for me, I'm just going to be like, I have this planned out, and this is how I'm going to do it. Uh-huh. And I'm going to let them know. So, like, it's all a mindset thing.
And when they say no, do you just stop? Or you say, no, I'm going to secretly do it aside, get it done, and then
secretly do it aside. I just, right. I do let them know how important it is.
Yeah.
And that it's part of my business.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, when you're responsible for getting things done for them, I think it's really hard for them to say no to.
Oh, okay.
So, it's kind of like you have this one shot to show people that you can do it. So, you... Yeah. Keep people in the loop with communication. You kind of hold yourself accountable to say, hey, I still got to get my family situated and get this done so that mm-hmm. I can go here. So time management is very important, mm-hmm. and yeah. I would assume.
And more than just even time management, but it's activity management. So I always believe that, you know, you have to manage your activities, and then you can manage a lot, but if you're not producing results, that's where you have the challenge. Yeah. If you manage the activity well and the results are there, that's where over time you start to gain support.
Yeah. So you say your partner with Tang, your husband Tang, did you guys, was it him that started, or was it you started, or you guys started in time? And how does that work between you guys?
So it's always me. I always get, like he says, you always try to get into trouble and then you drag me in with you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm more of the risk taker. But he's a really good support system for me. And that's the only way I truly believe that I was able to do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, coming right back after the break, I would like to elaborate on how important that mm-hmm. support structure is, because I know that we, as much as we would like to say we're independent, we can only go so far by ourselves. And that support system is so important. So stay tuned, guys. Right after the break, we'll come. Tona will elaborate more on that. Good discussions here. So I hope you guys are tuning in and learning.
Sexy.
Well, welcome back to the show. My name is Tua, and my co-host Tu Lee. And today's special guest is Tona. What you heard earlier was by David Yang, another rap artist and a Hmong comedian up in Minnesota. So to continue, Tua, what was your question earlier about Tona?
Well, we left off talking about how she was able to gain her successes and her accomplishments by communicating, and then her husband being her support system.
I see, yeah.
So we just would like her to elaborate more about that so that she can share her story so that anybody, men or women, but especially the women, especially in the older generation culture, if they have a bigger dream than what their support system would like for them to pursue, how can they go about that? And the importance of having that partner, that somebody, to say, hey, whatever you want, I will support you and I got your back.
Mm-hmm. For me, having the support of my husband, I think, is very crucial. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there were times where I'm really challenged with maybe his parents were not feeling well. And mm-hmm. But it was a business trip weekend for me or something like that, you know. And he would step up to the plate and just say, don't worry about it. You know, I'm home. I'll take care of it. I think just having that peace, you know, in your heart and in your mind that you know, that takes the guilt out of you.
Yeah.
Gets you focused. And, you know, what that does is it's almost like a price that you pay because you know you have obligations, but you're pursuing a dream. And you know that your dream is not just for you, but it's even for those people that aren't home, even the two sick people. You know, so when you're able to, like, just take that guilt off your shoulders, know that they're going to be taken care of, and then to go and be effective in your work, I mean, that is, I think, the greatest sense of support that anybody can have is for people to say, I've got your back, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree. That is so important these days, and I hope everybody that's out there listening, they realize that. And if somebody, your partner, your brother, your sister, your family, anybody, you know, friends, if they have a dream and they're sharing it with you, don't just automatically shoot them down or tell them to play it safe. You know, figure out in your own way how you can be a support system. It doesn't have to be a direct partner to support somebody. You know, it could be a friend. My wife and I, we've supported a lot of people who aren't direct families in whichever way we can, whether it's, you know, just inspiring them to continue or just giving them a pat on the back or helping them celebrate their little accomplishments and steps towards their bigger goals and dreams, or whether it be financial. You know, there's still ways that you can support somebody. And because the hope is that, you know, as they succeed, they'll remember who helped them along the way. Most people usually do. And maybe in turn, when it's your turn and you need that support, they will also reciprocate. And that's so important too. Like Tona said, you know, especially having that partner, though, I mean, that is a priceless support system, to have someone there to just lift that weight off your shoulder and say, I got you. Go do what you got to do, because I know that, you know, even if the situation, like you elaborate on, Tona, where, you know, if your parents are sick, you know, and your husband's watching them, you're out there trying to build the business, he knows that once the business is built, you guys will effectively be able to take care of the parents even better than you guys are now. So, yeah, for those of you that are listening out there, you know, just whatever your dreams are, just go for it and find support systems, whether it's directly as a partnership or not. There's many of them out there. And if you totally just can't find one, Tua and myself and my partners, we have a program that we will be rolling out. We'll elaborate more on it as it comes. But that's the purpose. That is my mission. That is my passion in life, is to help be that support system for you, whatever your goals and dreams are. So, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, and even like for me, having the support of my family and my friends are really important. But, you know, going beyond that is just having the right people to support you in your business. And that's just people you affiliate with, mm-hmm. people you spend time with. You know, you have to choose who you want to become.
because not all support is good support, right?
Not all support is good support. That's true. And so, you know, you'll have friends to do fun things with, but in your business, you're focused on building long-term relationships from people who are willing to teach you what they know and, you know, give you the warning signs that you need to avoid, you know, something that you're going to do that's going to be at the detriment of yourself and your business. And so, you know, you can't be afraid to go out and meet successful people. Meeting successful people has really helped me. I think that a lot of times when people are new, they feel like they're a little peon, you know, and they don't fit in the room. You'll be surprised. A lot of successful people, they love to share their legacy, and whatever they know, they don't want to take it to the grave. They always want to pass it on.
So how did you meet your first few successful people? Did you just approach them, or do you like join a networking group and you decided to just got in that way? How did you get to know your successful people?
Okay, so when I travel, I would meet people like on the plane, okay, or, you know, in a waiting area. I would just talk with them. You know, everybody traveling, we all need talking companions, right?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like me.
Yeah, so, you know, I met some just some really awesome people, and everybody's shared a little something with me or giving me advice. I've had people that I've stayed connected with over the years. Uh-huh. And it's just connecting with people who I think they have, they're very optimistic.
Yeah.
And they've made it. So you know that what they're telling you is their actual life experience. And mm-hmm. it's not a story that they heard from someone else. They're giving you their life experience.
I see. So on your application, you say on your resume, you say that from 2007 to 2016, you were like the Atlas Realty top producers. What got you from in the insurance industry into the realty business?
So I always challenged myself when I find myself kind of just plateauing on what I'm doing, I get a little bored, so I try something different. Mm-hmm. And so when in the insurance business, when I first got licensed and I was you know, doing a lot of traveling, just writing a lot of business, my husband got interested too. So he got licensed, and then I pretty much handed that business to him.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so he grew that business, and then I continued into the lending business and the real estate business.
So what does it take to become a real estate agent?
It doesn't take a whole lot, just okay, a commitment and the discipline to get through the courses and to study and to pass the test.
Okay. And I didn't remember you were basically offering these classes and mentorship to help you become a real estate agent through your, is it Realty Planet or?
Yes, through a broker friend of mine, Sean Yang, who runs Realty Planet, yes.
Okay. And are you still doing realty right now, or are you focused on other stuff?
I am more of a real estate investor now.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So just through those years of lending, I did lending in 2000 until 2007. Uh-huh. And then I still stay really close to the people that I was in the lending business with. Uh-huh. During the lending time, I just saw how much money people were making because they were investors of real estate. So uh-huh. I saw people who purchase property, they do buy and hold, and, you know, they wait for it to have equity, they sell it. I've seen people who do it, refinance, take money out, purchase multiple properties, and then be able to just maintain those properties. And in like 10 years, they go from having 3 properties to 10 properties.
I know that you saw all that stuff, but you weren't able to do it at that time. Was it like a process that you committed to that even though sometimes you want things so badly overnight, but then it doesn't happen, and it is a process that you have to commit to? And what was your commitment to get there?
Well, my commitment was, hey, what I saw on paper, if they can do, I can do. They're honestly no different from who I am, other than the fact that they're very disciplined and they're very focused on their goals. And I think that, and you don't want to deviate from that, you know?
So it's more of like a mental mindset that you got to have and say, you know what, I'm going to go do it no matter what it takes. I can learn along the way. I don't have to be perfect right now, but I can work towards that. So that's kind of the commitment, the mental commitment that you mm-hmm. have to tell yourself every day mm-hmm. as you wake up, as you're going through it, right?
Yes. And especially like one time I took my husband and I, we took our kids up to Shaver Lake. We had a week off. We decided to, you know, go camping and just enjoy the lake, run a little boat and stuff like that. And I went up there, I saw one of my old clients from the lending business, And he owned a lot of real estate all across, you know, the United States. But I always wonder, because before I met him, I went up there, and that's actually how I met him. He was up there, and I was like, so what do you do that on a Tuesday? You're just up here chilling on your boat fishing, right? That's how I met the guy.
Yeah,
that inspired
you. Yeah, and so he said, you know, that's a good question, and I'm going to give you the answer to that. And there it is.
Are you going to give us the answer?
He told me his story. It's called a blueprint. You know, like really, if you listen, if you really listen to what people are telling you, when it's genuinely true from their heart, you can learn a lot. So yeah, that's what he shared.
Stories to me, I have always been infatuated with stories, especially real stories. You know, not just the ones you see on TV that says inspired by a true story, but actually sitting there and listening to somebody tell you their story. I think that is so powerful, so impactful, so inspiring, that when you're able to meet someone like that, and like you touched on earlier, people who have been there and done that, they're always willing to share their legacy, their knowledge, because they know they can't take it with them, but they have to walk this line of, okay, well, is this person just going to waste my time when I could be really doing more efficient things with my time? So that's the thing. So if you're passionate about something and you really want to learn something, don't be scared. If you're a children, don't talk to strangers. But I always tell my adult friends, always talk to strangers, because you never know where that leads to. And if you don't, then there's nothing wrong with that either. But like she touched on earlier, Tona, when you have that ambition and you have that drive in you, just talk to anyone, everybody, listen to their stories. You never know where the stories will lead you to. So as we wrap that up, we're coming up to another break now. So thank you guys for tuning in, and
see you in a bit.
Kulun jual plak selalu sihat. Kau ya, teku bau dia kalau kau cari muka ku mat suaya. Kau dilujung
Welcome back. I hope you guys are enjoying what we have been talking about. I hope you guys have been taking notes and learning, because I myself have been enjoying it and learning a few things myself. This is Tua here with my host, co-host Tua, and we have our special speaker here, Tona. During the break, we were just kind of chit-chatting on the side, and she was telling me an amazing story about what her dad said to her. So Tona, if you could just share that story with us again on the air here, because even when you said it, that inspired me already, and it brought back flashbacks of my own past. But yeah, if you could share that, I think that would kind of just be like a bright light for everybody to hear.
Right. So like I was saying, just being, you know, someone that's here as a refugee and your life just totally just flipping upside down and everything's different. I remember coming to the United States, my father brought two of my cousins and three cousins, one that was a girl and two that were teens. Mm-hmm. Because they were orphaned during the Vietnam War, they came with us, and my oldest brother, and they were all the same age. So I remember us being in the living room, and we lived in Provo, Utah, and our house faces the east. And my brother and my cousin had said, well, what are we going to do now that we're in America? We don't speak English. We don't read. We don't write. I mean, they did it, but, you know, it's all in Laos.
Yeah.
So I remember that it was early in the morning. The sun probably just had come up over the mountains. While my dad had swung the door open, and he said, in America, the store is wide open. You could go out there and get anything you want. And, you know, I think as a young person, and you see your whole life being changed, you need to have something to hold on to. And for me, that was the spark that, you know, just hit me to the heart, and it just shot straight up to my head that he's right. Yep. He's right. He's absolutely right. When I look around, yeah, the world is so different. And, you know, you think about coming from an uncivilized, village, and where my dad worked in the city and he knew the city life. But, you know, we were villagers, my mom and us. So, I mean, I'm sure that he knows the contrast of that. But we felt it when we came to the United States. You just feel like you're lost.
Because like a fish out of water or something.
You're lost because there's so much, right? Yeah. And you can't even focus on one thing, but when he said that, it was true. We have so many things to choose from. And so there's just so many possibilities.
Mm-hmm. And there's a thing called shiny object syndrome, where when you're focused on your journey, on your passion, did you ever at one point say, you know what, I want to do that, do this, do that, that, and realize that, you know what, you're doing too many things, and how did you get back on track again?
Like I said, I'm naturally curious, so I try a lot of things. I always do it, though, when I go in 110% to see if it'll work out for me. And I truly believe that everything will work out if it's what you, if your heart's in it. Uh-huh. If it's something that I do for a while and the passion kind of dies out, I do something else.
Okay. So what was one of your failed investment that you would tell our listeners that what would you advise them that if the process?
How can you save them some pain?
Yeah.
to save some pain, don't get ahead of yourself. Don't take on more than what you can do. I remember a time when my husband and I, we expanded into 4 states. So we had...
What was it again?
4 states. When we were in the insurance business, we expanded
expanding too fast.
We expanded too fast. Yeah. So we had an office in Sacramento, one here in Fresno, one in Arizona. We had one in Minnesota, and then we had another one in Seattle. And I tell you, I lived my life 2 weeks on the road. So he'd be gone to one location, I'd be gone to the other location. We'd back home for 1 week, and then we'd switch off to the other two locations. But I think as far as the expansion, it was sustainable for us, but it was when I made the switch over to real estate. Mm-hmm. And I was not able to travel, and then the market crashed. We were not prepared for that. So
I don't think anybody was.
Yeah, we were not prepared for that. And then knowing about good credit, but not knowing enough about money and how money works, right? Mm-hmm. It's like we know how to invest and, you know, compound and have our money work for us. But like, we never ever had any issues where we were challenged with our credit because the market was bad. Oh my gosh, how are we going to maintain these four business leases at the same time we've got three or four mortgages, right? Mm-hmm. It is kind of really stressful at the time. But our thing was, we had made a lot of money and we were paying our bills because we did not want to lose our credit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And by holding on to a credit, we lost a lot of money because we kept paying out all our money, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My husband, he keeps saying, we should have just taken that money and cash out a few properties, but we kept paying the mortgages.
Yeah,
right?
That was a lot of mistakes that many went through.
Right. So it's just that, you know, like, we didn't have anyone who had ever experienced that. So like, when you're the first, you're the one in panic mode, you're the one that's trying to figure everything else out, right? So as soon as we were able to do that, then okay, we were able to help friends and families do it.
Yeah.
But it was not easy. And I think, again, it's just knowing people who kind of trailblazed ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. So that leads back to networking and being open-minded to meeting new people. Mm-hmm. And that leads to
talking to strangers.
Solutions.
Again.
Yes, because somebody is going to know something that you're going to need to know.
Yeah, yeah.
And networking is a huge thing for that.
And that brought us here today by knowing the right people and then being able to come to the radio show and be able to do the show to hopefully benefit everyone, that all the listeners out there. So, Tona, I noticed that you were in part of the Women Empowerment Group for a minute. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the Women Empowerment Group, so two groups, community groups that I'm involved with is the Hmong Women Empowerment Group. So we mainly focused on the story of our sisters.
Okay.
Yeah, so we highlight like the Hmong women who, you know, who came out of being the traditional Hmong woman and pursuing their careers and are advancing in life, you know, they're leaders in the community. And we hosted an actual conference over at Fresno City College in 2016. Uh-huh. And so it was just amazing to bring people together. We had a cohort. We had a retreat for the leadership team that helped put that together. And, you know, one thing that really came out of it was that we all learned that we each have a skill that if we pull together, we can get a lot done. Yeah.
Yeah. So going back to the mindset, having the right mindset is so important. But if you could elaborate on the mindset of all of those that are involved, because I know when a big project like that gets put on and you have a group of well-intended individuals collaborating together, everything can kind of sometimes seem all discombobulated and everybody's going in every which direction. So what kind of mental mindset did you have to say, okay, let's get our focus back and let's focus on the mission, and so everybody could be in step and go forward instead of just trying to get everything done all
right
at once?
So that conference took a lot of coordinating with Fresno City College and then getting like the speakers out, and then getting our panels lined up, the food, the volunteers.
Yes.
Yeah, it was, we pulled it off in less than 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were saying that they didn't think we could do it, but it turned out really good. We had over 240 women sign up.
That's
and
awesome.
Yeah, that's it amazing. Really did impact their lives. And even until this day, they're like, oh, you guys need to have another one. But yeah, so the mindset is really just, everything starts with your mindset. Like, honestly, people could tell you a million things to try and shoot your dreams down or tell you your ideas don't work. but you know, you'll be surprised along the way how you can make things work and things that you'll find in the people that you'll run into that can help you. The key is, you know, to always give back. And to me, I always am so grateful and appreciative of anybody, whether it was, you know, just a word of encouragement, whether it was an act of kindness, you know, a little small cup of coffee they bought me. Those things really keep me going. In the end, when it comes to business, we really are people business. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what, you know, like what area of business we're in. In the end, we deal with people because our consumers are people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's just for me, the mindset of, you know, staying on track, staying focused, even when things don't seem like it's working out, know when to throw in the towel and start something new.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's just shifting. So everything is in your mind.
Or they call that pivoting. You know, you pivot to another sidestep or pivot to another project. That correlates in the same section. Tua, did you have another question? I know you've been asking.
Tons of questions, but our time is almost coming to the end. But the last question is, what's one advice from your experience that you can tell the youth today that if you can go back in time and, you know, tell yourself that you would do differently, you know?
I would say... I did some of this, but I wish I would have done it sooner, is just to invest in yourself.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, invest in yourself. Spending time to really just know yourself is important. I know sometimes people don't like silence, or they always want to be around friends to have fun, but you'd be surprised. I would say, you know, spend time to really connect with yourself is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that why you wake up 5 o'clock in the morning?
I do. I keep telling you guys I have that ritual. I wake up really early. I wake up at 4 a.m, actually.
Early than I thought.
The rest of my family wakes up at 5:30.
I try to tell myself I wake up at 5 and I wake up at 8.
Yeah. But the key is to sleep at 10, not at 12, okay?
That is so true.
It does take some discipline. You know, I would tell them to be disciplined about what they do.
Uh-huh.
And do it with, you know, just in your mind what the end result will be. And focus to that. There's a lot of distractions. When you're in business, you meet a lot of people. You get invited to a lot of parties. Even networking. Some days they'll have 4 events. You're like, which one do I go to, right?
You get away, and you lose your focus.
When you have your focus, you'll know which one to go. Because, you know, to go to. And so those things are just, you know, little things that you learn along the way. But for me, I would say, yeah, definitely learn the disciplines and good habits.
So... when you first start out, you go into all these networking. When was a time when you decided to say, you know what? I've been to every network. When do you start saying, well, I'm going to pick a niche network instead?
Because,
you know,
when you go to networking, some people go to meet people.
Yeah.
When I go to meet someone that I can help or that they can help me. Mm-hmm. So what's the intention?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the purpose.
That is so important. A mentor of mine once told me, you don't have to listen to everyone. Not everyone knows what they're doing. And especially if they're not going in the direction you're going, you wanna stay focused and listen and follow the people who are where you want to be, because they're the only advice that matters. Mm-hmm. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody has advice. But again, not all support is good support.
Okay, so Tona, what's any last word for the listeners today?
Yeah, I would say, you know, when you talk about networking, I would like to just kind of close off with that. You know, networking to me is really important. I feel like there's a secret formula. One person knows at least 200 people.
Okay.
So giving people your time is very valuable. Mm-hmm. You make a good connection. Mm-hmm. And you build a good relationship, a true relationship, not one where you're just expecting something to happen, but where you're going to make something happen together. I have found that my business has been built at least 70% based on referrals. Mm. And those are people I don't know that come to me for my business. And it's through their trust and it's through the trust of other people.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, when people trust and like you and there's 10,000 people doing what you do, given that everything is equal, that they choose you, that says a lot.
So build your reputation, build your branding, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
And your relationships. Yeah. Yes.
All right. I want to thank Tona for coming on board and also my co-host too. Next week, Tuesday, I'll be back here. Me and Tu will be back here. And next week, our special guest is Hector Cavazos. He is a local here, a professional headshot photographer. So all you photographers out there, if you want to become the best, be sure to tune in next week and bring on Hector. And he's going to talk about his experience as an entrepreneur and photographer. So tune in next week, 1 and 2 on Tuesday.
This was a special program on Multicultural 1600 AM.